Paula Kersey, who's on the line with us right now, our labor policy director, who is not going to do stand-up with us in our poor attempt at it this morning. Welcome, Paul. I appreciate spending some time with us.
Well, thank you.
Paul, we were talking about labor issues right here, in particular, how to restore balance to labor laws. Now, what gets you to decide to write this latest paper that you put out? I know one's already out, and you've got some others that are coming, as far as the unions and laws of economics and so forth like that.
Well, I think the thing that that spurred that was seeing the end of the negotiations between UAW and the automakers, and seeing the sort of the end game of the unions and their and the sort of the traditional Detroit structure for labor negotiations and the traditional structure for UAW contracts and seeing that sort of winding down now. The one thing about it is that the competitors that Detroit has, especially the ones that have actually set up shop in the United States and started producing cars here, and there are lots of cars that are made in the United States and that just aren't made by the big three anymore. And the structure that you have there for those companies is they don't try to match the UAW on benefits and on work rules. They will come pretty close to where the UAW is on just base salary, but they do expect that they do write the contract so that they are less generous on the health care benefits and on the retirement benefits. So that's the actual structure of the market, and that's the other thing that I would point to respond to the UAW's claims that cars could be produced for $1,500 a piece. That if you look at the actual competitors, their actual behavior doesn't bear that out. Yes, they do sell cars at a higher profit margin than Detroit does, but that's because they have more reasonable labor contracts. And the UAW has had to step back from a lot of its demands and a lot of its guarantees that it's made in the past, largely to bring things down to where the labor costs are competitive with the companies, with the foreign companies that are making cars in the U.S. That is the way the market is actually playing out.
It's going to be interesting to see how this turns out. Now, that lays out the scenario a little bit. Let's talk about what could be done to do some changes and create this balance that we're talking about. Talk to us about some of your thoughts about making labor law more balanced. I mean, what is it going to take to do that, and what's your thoughts of what balance is, I guess? Excuse me for my Clinton reference almost.
Hey, no problem. The problem is that most of the labor law, especially in terms of the private sector, private companies, private charities, and the like, really is set by the federal government, and it's going to take congressional action to fix a lot of the problems. However, in Michigan, there is one thing we could do, which is to pass a law that would make union membership voluntary, to allow individual workers to the final decision on whether or not to join a union or whether or not to pay union dues. And what this would do is it would make unions much more accountable, much more sensitive to the concerns of individual workers in terms of how they represent them. Now, the one argument you will have against this is the notion that you will have people benefiting from union contracts who are not paying for union representation. There's a couple of different things I would say to that. First of all, the states that have been doing this have been outperforming Michigan for the last 20 years, and especially in the last 5 years. They've been adding jobs at twice the rate of states that, like Michigan, that don't allow workers that individual choice. Their economies have been growing faster, and they are poised to overtake Michigan. A lot of them are poised to overtake Michigan in terms of income even. The bottom line is, in terms of what actually works for workers, allowing union membership to be optional works. The other thing I would say is that there's an assumption that all workers gain under a union contract. that's frequently the case, but not automatically so. If you think about a typical union contract where a lot of things are settled by seniority, promotions are settled by seniority. Who is laid off if, God forbid, the company has to let go of workers. That is worked out by seniority. If you're a young worker at a unionized company and they have a typical seniority plan in place, you are at the bottom of the line for promotions. You are at the top of the line for layoffs. And that's that leaves open a question of whether the union really is representing your best interests as well as it could be. The other question I would ask is that our research and the research of a number of organizations that have looked at this question have found that the typical union spends more on political activities and social causes, you know, in a broad sense, than they actually do on the nitty-gritty worker representation, on doing collective bargaining, on enforcing the contract, on representing the worker and handling grievances. Political and social causes actually take up more of a union budget than worker representation. And as long as that is the case, is this money really necessary for workers to receive the kind of representation that they're supposed to get? I think that's a question that the unions should be put in a position where they should answer it.
You know, they bring that up. They come up with it, and I've heard that the other side, and I know you have too, and I'd like to get your thought on it, which is they say that, we're looking into candidates who will represent union's interests. We're trying to elect people who care about union ideals and who think in the support of unions and supporting our future cause. And I'm sure you've heard that mantra in some form or another and over time, too. I'd like to get your thought on it.
Well, again, remember the union's primary role is not political. It is workplace representation. We don't bring in unions so that they can run a political action committee. Workers don't bring in unions so that they can support presidential campaigns or congressional campaigns. If workers wanted to do that, they could just as easily make the contributions on their own. The reason that people bring in workers is because they want to bring in expert representation at the workplace, and they want to be in a position where they can present a united front to management at the workplace. Workplace issues are what unions exist to operate on, not the political issues. I'm not saying that unions shouldn't do politics at all, but right now you've got a situation where the political seems to take up more of union resources than the workplace issues, and that's a questionable set of priorities.
With that in mind, I've got to check on the forecast. 8:50 this morning. Just real quick, let you know we've got scattered flurries today. Could see 2 to 4 tonight on the high end. Tomorrow, maybe another 1 to 4. I'll give you the whole forecast a little bit later. Right now, Paul Kersey's on the line. Paul is the labor policy director for the Mackinac Center for public policy. Well, obviously, let me just ask you, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but my thoughts is that current union representation are not happy when you put out articles like this.
Well, the union officials tend to oppose what we're doing, and it's understandable because we are asking to make a change to how unions run their business, and change can be upsetting and scary, especially in a situation where the economy is struggling already. But we also get a lot of support from individual union members out there who have seen what their union is doing, are not entirely confident in the union membership, or I'm sorry, in the union officials, and want to see the unions made more accountable to them.
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. So the rank and file and the union leaders oftentimes not on the same page.
You can't assume that they're all on the same page, no.
Well, with that in mind, do you think that this can actually happen under this particular Congress or even the next one? I mean, we've got a Democratic Congress right now who the unions have steadfastly supported, even though until this last presidential election, the Democrats have been behind free trade, something fierce, on the national level anyway. And Bill Clinton was the one who made sure that the first NAFTA was in place, as we recall. So with that in mind, you've got people who, I guess, are beholden to unions because unions, even though that's happened, have steadfastly supported them. But at the same point, it looks like we've got a Democratic Congress now. I won't say for sure that we're going to have a Democratic president, but that possibility is certainly a real one and increases in the House and Senate. I mean, is this something that just is looked at for down the road? Is this something that that we're seeing changes in the parties?
On the federal level, any sort of significant change in labor law is unlikely, especially in a positive direction. On the federal level, right now, they're more likely to pass what is called mandatory card check, which is a whole other problem, and I'd be happy to come back on the program and talk about the shortcomings with that. I think the main issue is going to be at the state level, where states are going to be looking at making union dues and union membership optional. I think we've got a possibility here in Michigan. There's a lot of people that are looking at the situation that we have in the state and are realizing that what we had is simply not working. The assumptions we've always made about the economy and about the workplace seem to be unraveling around us, and it may be time for us to reevaluate and change the way the state runs its businesses.
It may be indeed, and it's going to be. It certainly is the case in other things what the state's doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
With that in mind, I wonder if anything can really be done on the state level, just the same as national. I mean, we've got I hate to sound partisan, but it normally is. Am I wrong in seeing partisan? Normally, it seems to be the case that the Democrats support unions, the Republicans don't, and it kind of goes back and forth like that as how the pendulum swings.
Well, you can't ignore the makeup of the legislature and the ideology of the current governor. You can't ignore those things. And in the short term, legislative action is very unlikely. There's no getting around that. But we do allow referendums in this state. It is possible to get the legal changes we need made that way. And we may see some action on that on that front. I think this is a situation where the people of the state of Michigan in general are actually probably ahead of the political leadership. And I think that there's a lot of people in Michigan that are looking at the situation, looking at what's happening in Detroit, and saying what we're doing in the state isn't working. It's time we go through and look at all of our options and put ourselves back in a position where Michigan can be competitive and attractive to employers again.
Well, that's going to be a big turn, but it needs to happen, no doubt, with the economy and the situation it's in. Do you feel confident? Do you feel like what's your feeling as you walk out of this interview and look at the current landscape of things?
You know, I don't like to predict about politics. I think.
Well, I can see why.
Yeah. I don't pretend to be an expert on politics. I am an expert on policy. I do think there's a lot of interest in this issue. I do think that a lot of people are looking at this. So I see opportunities out there. I'm not going to predict victory. I'm not the sort of person to do that. But I do see opportunities where they weren't there before. I'll go that far.
Should be interesting to watch then. What's the latest things we're going to be seeing down the pike on this? What should we be watching in the news for, keeping up with as far as the next steps?
Well, I'm not privy to all the machinations that are going on in terms of legislation or a ballot initiative. But I do think what people should be looking for is more talk about the union dues issue. I think you're going to see just more newspaper articles. We're going to be working on this issue quite a bit, pointing out the price that Michigan pays for mandatory union membership. And I think you're going to see more organizations, more groups, more policy groups, more political groups just talking about this and testing the waters and making the case for it and seeing if people react.
It'll be interesting indeed. I really appreciate you spending some time with us today. Paul, it's been a great conversation. if we want to see the article that you wrote on the labor unions and some of the ones that are up and coming, what's the best way to find those?
Well, everything that Mackinac Center produces shows up on our webpage before too long. So you can check out our website, www.mackinac, that's Mackinac with a C, MACKINAC.org. Anything that we do is going to show up there.
Sounds fair enough. We'll be watching for it. Paul Kersey, good talking to you today.
Well, thank you for having me aboard, and Merry Christmas.
To you as well.
Okay.